Welcome back to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Dr. Michael Sala. Michael, before we get back to the phones, got a really cool tweet in from Anthony, and he wants to know if there's any truth about the base on the dark side of the moon. Do you have any information on that?
Well, yes, that's a really fascinating question from Anthony there. There definitely is stuff up there on the far side of the moon, according to what the whistleblowers have said. The Secret Space Program whistleblowers have said that the far side of the moon is kind of like a very populated territory by different extraterrestrial races, and that it, in a way, it's like Antarctica in terms of it being a kind of diplomatic zone without there being any kind of military bases being built, because the different extraterrestrial groups up there have had their wars up there, and they decided long ago to, you know, ban war up on the moon, and so it's a diplomatic safe zone. And this is, as I said, several whistleblowers have talked about that. What's interesting about William Tompkins is that he said that an attempt by the Navy, the U.S. Navy, to place bases on the moon, to build military bases, that was why the Apollo missions were stopped. That the Apollo missions actually had four stages, and he said that the first stage was what we saw, but that the second stage involved the Apollo rockets being replaced by, or the Saturn V rockets being replaced by much larger rockets called Nova rockets that Tompkins says that he helped design when he was at Douglas.
Interesting.
And that these Nova rockets had 10 times the payload of the Saturn V, and that the Navy was planning to build five bases on the moon with 2,000 personnel, and that that this was prevented when the Apollo 11 landed, and basically Armstrong and Aldrin were greeted by a fleet of extraterrestrial spacecraft on the rim of this of the Sea of Tranquility crater that basically sent the message that no, you're not welcome to build your military bases up here, and you know, just collect a few rocks and go back.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, I always wondered whatever happened to those ideas, because growing up, you and I, that's all they talked about were space stations, hotels, moon bases, Mars bases, and that we had something to look forward to. And then all of a sudden, it was just never mentioned again. It was like it never happened. Let's go to Wild Card. Eric in San Luis Obispo, California. Eric, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Jimmy. Can you hear me clearly?
We got you, Eric.
Great. Two quick questions. First question, when will you be visiting with Mr. Tompkins again, Dr. Sala?
We'll be seeing Bill Tompkins again in August, and I'll be following up with some more questions and interviews. And the interviews I did do with him, I got them on videotape, and eventually I do plan to release some of that, probably over the next few weeks. But I need to go through and process it and make it available. But definitely there's more to come, and he's working on the second volume of his autobiography. He basically covered the years from 1941 up until 1970. So the next volume is going to be talking more about what he did from 1970 up until the time he worked at General Dynamics at Crystal City when the Solar Warden program went operational.
You said you had one more question, Eric. What was it?
This was the real important question to me. Is George Bush Sr. is the same age as Tompkins, and I'm wondering in your discussions with him if you saw any documents, or was there any discussion about maybe Bush Sr.'s involvement in any of these programs?
Yeah, that's a great question, Eric. Thank you so much. How about that, Michael? Any communication about George Bush Sr.?
No mention of George Bush Sr., but we need to remember here that George Bush Sr. was basically a CIA agent. During the Kennedy assassination, he was part of that group that was basically planning to assassinate Cuba, the Cuban president, and so George Bush Sr. has been a CIA agent and, of course, a director ever since, whereas Tompkins has pretty much worked with the U.S. Navy and various corporations that have served as contractors to the U.S. Navy ever since. So he hasn't had much involvement at all with the CIA.
Let's go to Tom up in Port Angeles, Washington. That's like the farthest northwest city on the continental U.S. Tom, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Yes, we are the leading edge of aviation here. Next stop, Japan.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a pretty cool place to live.
I've been there. I have been there. So, what's your question?
We talked about it last time. The question is: A, does the figure Valiant Thor figure into this at all? The resident alien at the Pentagon?
Well, you know, Valiant Thor kind of fits into the picture of a group of friendly, human-looking extraterrestrials wanting to provide assistance to the U.S. Government and to the planet in terms of being able to deal with these advanced technologies. What Bill Tompkins described was another group of kind of Nordic-looking extraterrestrials that were pretty much focused on helping humanity or helping the Navy develop technologies to build space battle fleets, because they wanted to basically have them join as recruits or join the kind of Nordic galactic space fleets as allies. So essentially what you have is two very different approaches by extraterrestrial groups, one saying, you need to be more spiritual and develop ethics before you start developing or building these advanced technologies, whereas another group saying that, look, we want you to build these advanced space battle fleets because we need you out there as allies, because
the reporters
are doing all these nasty things.
Thank you for the... Oh, yeah, real quick, Tom.
You bet. If there's such a presence, if there's such a big presence of alien technologies and different aliens, practicing politics here on the Earth, why are we still doing backflips on a 30-year-old space station that we've just about run out of useful things to do there?
That's a great question. Thank you so much, Tom.
Well, the International Space Station, as well as what NASA does and the European Space Agency does, that, these are all cover programs. These are all programs basically designed to make people believe that we don't have any kind of deep space capabilities or technologies capable of taking us outside of the solar system. And, they're doing that because essentially the ISS and the rockets that the other space nations build are using fossil fuels, and they basically want to keep humanity locked into this idea that the fossil fuels are the only effective form of propulsion that has been developed by scientists on the planet, which really is nonsense, because as I mentioned, back in the 30s and 40s, the Nazis had already developed these anti-gravity technologies, and the Navy followed soon afterwards, developing their own. So, these anti-gravity technologies have been developed for covert programs and for these space programs, but NASA and the ISS are very convenient cover programs, because they kind of one, they hide the truth about these anti-gravity space battle fleets that the Navy has, and also kind of keeps humanity locked in this cycle of just using fossil fuel industry, fossil fuel propulsion systems, which of course benefits those elites that have these interests in fossil fuels.
What do you think if this is just came in off of Twitter? What do you think about if World War III started to kick off? Do you think E.T. would step in?
Well, I think E.T. has already stepped in a few times to kind of prevent nuclear war from happening.
Sure.
You know, this is, you know, even Robert Dean talked about that in the early, in 1960s with the NATO and the assessment that, you know, basically because of these flying saucers that appeared, that the Soviets, you know, the Warsaw Pact and the NATO had to kind of revise their protocols and their procedures for responding to what might be perceived to be a hostile or a nuclear surprise attack by the other side, because these UFOs were kind of like you know, creating this uncertainty. So, you know, I think that there are, ever since that time, many situations where there have been a greater awareness on the part of the, you know, either the NATO or the Warsaw Pact or Russia now about extraterrestrials, about the possibility that, you know, we're not alone, and that that secretly there needs to be cooperation between the major powers, even though there might seem to be kind of a lot of surface tension between them, as we saw during the Cold War and now this new Cold War with Russia. But as far as the elite that are involved in these covert programs are concerned, they understand that they need to cooperate.
Let's go to Michael out in Long Island, New York, Wildcard. Michael, welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Good morning, Jimmy Church. Can you hear me?
We got you, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much. And Dr. Sela, the question I have is, in your research, have you set back to look at the Hollywood, well, the two films that stand out for me are The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original, and Starman. And the Nordics that you talk about in conflict with the reptilians.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. As far as the Day the Earth Stood Still, you know, that's a classic, and I certainly remember how much of an impact that had on me when I was a youngster seeing that for the first time. I think it does very nicely encapsulate this message that there is a galactic community out there that is very concerned about nations that embark on warfare, and I think we on Earth have been kind of like dragged into this ongoing galactic conflict that's out there. You know, one side, you know, the kind of Nazi involvement, cooperation with a group of kind of, let's say, more aggressive extraterrestrials, that has created a problem out there, and there's another faction which, you know, we can describe as Solar Warden and the Navy, and that's cooperating with another group of extraterrestrials. So there's definitely a lot of division out there, and what we need to do now is promote a greater understanding of all the different actors in these programs and try to have some kind of disclosure so that we can kind of bring more order into what exactly is being decided behind the scenes by the policymakers.
Thank you for the call, Michael.
Thank you.
You know, Michael Rennie and Patricia Neal, still to this day, that movie freaks me out. There's something about I think Michael Rennie was an alien. That's just me.
Right, yeah, no, it was an amazing movie. I think it really kind of helped open people's minds up to what's going on out there. And I think this has been the continuing pattern where, you know, movies and Hollywood is kind of used to instill ideas into people's minds about, you know, what are the possibilities out there. And of course, we have both sides of, you know, very positive ETs in The Day the Earth Stood Still or in Star Trek. And then you have the opposite side, you know, Independence Day and, you know, that kind of more fearful image of extraterrestrials, so that, you know, we are seated with these possibilities so that, you know, when there's a decision made about disclosure, that, you know, that those that are packaging the disclosure information can do it to kind of manipulate humanity in one direction or another. And I know that's something that Corey Good is very concerned about with his disclosure information, to kind of like really help bring about a full disclosure rather than some partial disclosure, which is only going to be contrived to manipulate humanity into thinking in only a kind of limited way about our real situation.
Well, what is disclosure really? Because it seems like we've already been disclosed. I don't think there's any question about ET contact or presence going back for thousands of years. I mean, what is it, when somebody talks about disclosure now, what is it that they truly want? Is it a government admission, which isn't going to happen, or is it the proverbial, you know, flying saucer on the White House lawn, which I think we've already achieved anyway?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Jimmy. I mean, I guess there's kind of a public disclosure, and that's, and we're doing that right now, just talking about these issues and talking about the different whistleblowers. You know, this is disclosure. When you buy a book by someone like William Tompkins, you know, that's a form of disclosure as well. And of course, there's official disclosure, and I think that's what most people associate disclosure with. But in the end, you know, you're quite right. It may not be that official disclosure is the most important thing, because, and we're seeing this with the information Corey Good has released, that, you know, whatever comes from the official sector is going to be packaged in a way to kind of limit what's really going on. But I think full disclosure is really, you know, this kind of background preparation people have been doing in reading or...
You know. Well, you know, and on top of that, our current sitting president has been on two talk shows in the last year discussing ET. And that is disclosure right there in itself. Our guest tonight is Michael Sala. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. I will get to all of your calls right after this short break. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stay right there. Welcome back to Coast AM. And Michael, let's get straight back to the phones. We'll try to get all of these in before the end of the show. Let's go to Bob, east of the Rockies in Connecticut. Bob, welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, good morning, Jimmy, to you and to Dr. Salas. I had a more or less a philosophical question to address to both of you. Just a couple of thoughts before to kind of preface it. Dr. Salas has mentioned at least two alien races, the Nordics, reptilians. There are, you know, speculations as far as to there being more. And also, on a personal note, I have seen UFOs during Hudson Valley flap of the 80s, and then 30 years later, of two different configurations, completely different configurations of craft, stone cold sober at the time, and don't believe I was suffering from hallucinations. And on that note also, we have the testimony of Robert Sala and the other commanders of the ICM commanders from the 60s from Minot and Malmstrom Air Force Base, and also corroborating testimony but from Soviet commanders in the Ukraine at the same time, of alien of UFOs being overhead and losing control of launch abilities, or the launch abilities set to launch, either launched or
right.
Set to either launch or being disabled.
Sure.
And it just seems inconceivable to me that that beings capable of interstellar travel, that's unbelievable in itself, but beings that are capable of interstellar travel are yet still down here instructing countries down here on how to build battle fleets. So it's just inconceivable to me. I can't get a grip on it, and that's basically where I wanted to put the question to you and then Dr. Sala. as to your beliefs on what the ultimate resolution of all this might be. Where is it going? Is everyone in the universe condemned to continual endless stupidity and conflict?
All right. Well, that's
power and dominance and ignorance. It's inconceivable. Can't we get beyond this?
Exactly, Bob. That is a great question. And Michael, let me suggest this, and then I'd like to hear your answer. It's kind of pretty simple, the answer to me. If I was the last man on Earth, right, with everything that I know about cell phones and cars and the internet and my knowledge of how to do things, right? And I'm the last guy on Earth. And tomorrow I needed to build a cell phone. I can't do that, right? I can't build a car. I can't build a spaceship. I can't. You can tell me about it. You can suggest it. But that doesn't mean I have the knowledge to go and build a cell phone tomorrow, let alone a spacecraft. And so that's part of the issue. We can be told about things, but just because we can be told about space travel doesn't mean that we have the ability to go out and build it. And it's kind of contradictory if you think about it.
It's a very interesting question from Bob. I think, basically, taking what Tompkins has said and what Corey Good has said about the history of the secret space programs, it seems that it's like a galactic conflict has come to the Earth. In other words, you had differing groups of extraterrestrials choosing different sides in global conflict, the Nazis being chosen by one side, and then the US Navy being chosen by another side, both wanting to have assets or recruits or support for their program.
Right.
And then, I think this is where Corey Good's information becomes interesting. He describes this new kind of group of extraterrestrials that really behave as a kind of type 3 category of extraterrestrials, the Sphere Being Alliance, that kind of like come in and put a freeze on the thing, put a freeze on the whole kind of conflict zone in our solar system with all of these groups taking sides and just kind of like playing out this galactic-wide conflict that's been going on for such a long time. And the Sphere Being Alliance put this kind of quarantine around the whole solar system and basically says, okay, until these incoming cosmic energies kind of resolve things or awaken people and sufficiently so that you can kind of come to a new understanding on how you're going to deal with one another, then this quarantine stays in place, and we're kind of in the midst of that right now. So maybe we are going to wake up a little wiser and maybe come up to some solution that deals with this kind of conflict, not just at a planetary level, but also at a galactic level. We're not there yet, and we still seem to be a long way from there, but maybe, we'll be seeing that over the next year or so.
Let's go to a neighbor of yours, Leilani, out in Honolulu, Hawaii. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM. You're live. Okay, then let's go to Thomas in San Diego, California. Thomas, welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you, Jimmy. Another great show as always. And it's an honor and a privilege to speak with you, Dr. Sella. My question was I wanted to expand on Operation High Jump. About 10 years after Operation High Jump, I believe in 1956, maybe 1957, the American military conducted a hydrogen bomb test over Antarctica. And specifically, they exploded 3 large hydrogen bombs simultaneously over Antarctica. It blew a large hole in the ozone layer. It created a very tremendous electromagnetic pulse. And I've often wondered, just my personal speculation, whether that hydrogen bomb test that hydrogen bomb trifecta, three simultaneous hydrogen bombs exploding over Antarctica, was like round two of Operation High Jump. And I was wondering if the cover story by the American military was that it was part of the International Geophysical Year, you know, 1956, 1957. But I've often wondered whether they were doing something else, maybe trying to take out those bases again in round two. And I wondered if you would comment on that.
Thank you so much, Thomas. That's a great question. Michael?
Yes, it is. It's a very interesting question, too, because, yes, I've heard that the International Geophysical Year was used as a cover for the detonation of these atomic weapons down there in Antarctica. And, you know, that kind of Queen Maud land, New Schwaben land, where the Nazi bases were located, was the target of that. It may be simply that this may have being part of the way in which the Antarctic Treaty was kind of like put together and signed, so that way all of the nations, because basically the Antarctic Treaty prescribed all military bases in Antarctica and, you know, the development or use of nuclear weapons in Antarctica, and basically dedicate Antarctica to scientific exploration. So it may be that the use of those nuclear weapons was to basically make all the other nations of the world believe that Antarctica no longer was a problem in terms of these Nazi bases. And then, of course, by 1958, you know, the Nazis, you know, with the help of their reptilian allies, were now well established in being a kind of galactic power, you know, with bases on the moon, bases on Mars, bases in other solar systems with fleets. So Antarctica was no longer necessary. And so it may be that they just evacuated the Antarctic bases and the U.S. kind of went through the motions of saying, okay, we've destroyed these bases, and so from now on, Antarctica will be a military-free or military-neutral zone.
Thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Wildcard Bob in Philly. Bob, welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Say hi to Dr. Salah.
How's it going, brother? Good to be on with you guys. The talk here of these two whistleblowers, it's absolutely fascinating. I was thinking they'd be a great addition to the Free Your Mind conference in Philadelphia this coming April. Are you guys familiar with that by chance?
I am. I don't know if Dr. Sala is, but what's the question, Bob?
Well, thinking about some of the free energy or energy technologies that the exopolitical forces have introduced to us Earthlings, I was wondering what the end-all be-all is when it comes to our economic policy and our scarcity-based economic system. It seems to me that there's a perpetuation of scarcity in fossil fuels, and there's some sort of agenda behind this because, as we all know, free energy or abundant energy is, in fact, a reality in this universe. Thanks again, and I really do think this should be at the upcoming Free Your Mind conference. You guys are great. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for the phone call, Bob. What are the implications, Michael? You're the exact right person to ask about this.
Yes, well, you know, we really do need to have these free energy technologies come up into the open source, into the public sector. Of course, you know, the fossil fuel industry is very powerful, and it's been keeping this free energy technology from coming up into the public arena. But I think, you know, with the testimonies of people like Bill Tompkins, Corey Good, and others, it's quite clear that these secret space programs have gone way beyond the use of traditional rocket propulsion technologies, that anti-gravity is very real, and that it's been in operation for at least 60, 70 years now. And so this is really important for this technology to be made publicly available, so that way the kind of pollution of the planet and the geopolitics of the planet can be changed, so that way we're not caught in this kind of perennial oil wars where, you know, places like the Middle East flare up just because, you know, one one country is not happy with the way in which oil is being monopolized or being used for international commerce.
Let's go to Daniel Wildcard in Richmond, California. Daniel, welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Jimmy Church, great show. What's up there, Doc? Wanted to say the word of the day, which is tokamak. A couple questions. You guys might have heard of the Tesla coil back in 45, Philadelphia experiment that made the battleship disappear. They tried to make an electromagnetic field, and the battleship disappeared and then reappeared in a couple states over in a dock. When it reappeared at the location, there were people missing and some had missing limbs. I got a website up, timejumpworld.com, timejumpteam.com.
Daniel, what's the question?
Well, do you think that this is a time jump? And this was in 45. You know, if you're making something disappear and reappear, and what I was going to ask you is, where is that technology today? This is 1945. Are the aliens using this technology? And the last question, Tom, for you guys, I haven't heard from Jimmy, I haven't heard Call Screamer Tom. Do you guys think that the aliens have abducted Call Screamer Tom? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Tom is fine. Producer Tom. And, well, you know what? The thing is, Michael, when it comes to the Philadelphia experiment, is that, it was electromagnetic, but it was there to make the ship blind or invisible to radar, not to be invisible. You know, I think that's always been confusing, to most, that they assume that when they were talking about invisibility, that it was to make the ship invisible itself.
Well, the Philadelphia experiment was something that Tompkins said that the Navy spies were aware of, that this was a technology that was being discussed and being disseminated to the various corporations as well. So Tompkins was doing that. So he said that, yes, Philadelphia experiment was very real. But the thing was that the Nazis had been able to master teleportation a lot more quickly than the U.S. did, that the U.S. Navy was conducting the Philadelphia experiment. It created all sorts of problems, as you mentioned, but that the Germans succeeded in developing teleportation as a means of interstellar travel, and that they actually did succeed in making these interstellar trips in the 40s using some kind of teleportation principle. So, teleportation definitely has been around for a long time, and it is now a standard part of the secret space programs, and Corey Good has described how it operationally is used for many of the space programs that do this interstellar space travel.
Well, what's next for you now? What are you currently working on?
Right now I'm just kind of working on analyzing Bill Tompkins' material, trying to kind of like get the nuances of what he's revealed, compare that to what I know about the other secret space programs and, the whistleblowers, and see if there are other whistleblowers who come forward. Corey has been saying that according to the secret space program meetings that he's attended, that there's been a go-ahead for more whistleblowers to come forward. So I'm looking forward to more of these people coming forward so we can do the cross-referencing and really get a much firmer grasp on exactly the history of these programs and, you know, the key players, the key corporations, and see what that means in terms of the current policies that need to be kind of understood in our modern day.
I want to thank you for coming on tonight. Absolutely fascinating conversation, Dr. Sala, and for manning the phones with me here. Everybody has questions. Thank you so much. And, of course, the website is www.exopolitics.org.